will be dealt with right now. Give us an overview of where we would like to go as a committee. So, gentlemen, we are in your able hands. Adam, if you want to give a brief recap and inform them what the gentleman will focus on. Thank you.
Good morning. As I indicated before, I'm the researcher for the committee. So I've dealt with some of the content issues related around strategic planning for the next 5 years. Mr. Dolo here is from the project management office. They deal primarily with strategic planning, amongst other things. He'll give us a brief overview, which is given to all members in this big file that they received in volume 2, in section 8. It just deals with all the planning of the committee and the strategic planning for the next 5 years. And he's going to give us a brief overview and a summary of that process. And then we'll go back to the actual content issues again, where members can raise their concerns. I've done a strategic document, so you can just give this to members. Yeah. Mr. Dollar, PP.
Chairperson, honorable member, my name is Malusi Dolo. I'm from the Strategy and Business Planning, basically managing the project management office within that section. I think, if I'm not mistaken, some of you might have seen me before in one of the processes and sections in preparation for the establishment of the fourth parliament. I was also facilitating the sessions on strategic planning for returning members. So I hope my face is much familiar. The part of my presentation or my information sharing with you today is to, you know, familiarize or remind members of Parliament on the process that Parliament normally takes in putting together a strategic planning or a strategic document such as this one. And this talks to the one on third parliament. With regard to fourth parliament, that process is underway. It hasn't been completed. In terms of section 14, in terms of section 14 of Financial Management of Parliament Act 2009, a new strategic plan for Parliament needs to be tabled within 6 months after election. So in other words, we have up to the 20th or the 22nd to have the document ready. Now, I know an announcement was made during the budget vote too that committees will immediately embark on business planning session in line with departmental business and strategic plan. And I know that process is underway. This one is part of that. Following the request from my colleague, how Parliament embarks on the strategic planning is obviously following the election. And once that has happened, the leadership, the POs, and the office bearers embark on a process of vision sharing, where they, based on the mandate, normally that is the direction from the majority party, a vision is created. In other words, a new direction for the fourth parliament or a parliament is undertaken. Well, the vision sharing starts in a very small group where the POs and the house chairs from different houses would have actually engaged. And once that is done, the vision sharing is now shared in an encountering session where different people share different thoughts, and that will involve a bigger group such as the House Chairperson, Committees of Chair, Chief Whips, and then the so-called Summit of Visions, a number of summits to now further and expand on that, the views and the thoughts about what Parliament should do given the mandate, the mandate that is given to them, to each, then there will be at least another final vision where a framework, a strategic framework will be crafted. The strategic plan needs to be, the strategic framework needs to be adopted officially by the following structure, POA, Parliamentary Oversight Authority, the National Assembly itself, and the National Council of Progress itself at different houses. The framework is just a bony type of a document without meat in it, in other words, without content in it. It is really based on those, let's say, 3-4 goals that Parliament or first Parliament want to embark on, and the priorities or set of priorities or objectives that associate that goes with it that need to be provided with some sort of content on how, what we need to do, what program of action we need to take, what projects we need to undertake to translate those objectives into outcomes and objectives and eventually some level of impact at a later stage. Now, the accounting officer, being secretary to Parliament, is responsible for drafting a plan. In other words, with much more content involving all the necessary resources in Parliament to assist in the process. Once that is done, it's taken again back to the authorities, executive authority for approval. Once approval is done, then the final touches are made, and then the final plan is presented by the executive authority to Parliament for adoption on a given date. Like I said, it must happen before the 22nd of October. This date yet to be determined. It needs to be on the program of Parliament, on the parliamentary program, because it's a procedural process. So that's in a nutshell what happens when we really work together in Parliament, involving all the stakeholders to put together such a document. Now, when it comes to planning for different structures, such as committees, the planning around committee at this stage is still based on the first strategic document for Parliament. We have five core objectives that Parliament has. Part of those five core objectives, just to reiterate, is to pass law, that is objective one. To oversee and scrutinize executive action, that is objective two. To facilitate public participation and involvement, that is core objective three. And to participate in, promote, and oversee cooperative government, that is objective four. And five, to engage in and participate and oversee international relations. Those are your core, and those are the fundamental objectives to provide direction to business planning for every structure in Parliament, such as committee, for example. Now, when it comes to strategic objectives, we have three. The first one is also about oversight, but it's basically about building a quality process of scrutinizing and overseeing government actions. Second one is to build a people's parliament that is responsive to the needs of all the people of South Africa. And the third one is building an effective and efficient institution. Now, what...
Just a second. I was thinking that it would have made it easier to follow if we had a copy of your presentation.
I have this document. I can put it up. It's a business plan document that you're speaking from. Yeah.
Which page are you on there?
I am going to move on to this page under committee. Committee. I've covered all those objectives, both
core and strategic. The problem with the... Thank you. If you look at the section 4, it now goes straight to committees, because the committee's business plan should be based on Parliament's business, Parliament strategic and business plan in general. I've talked about five core objectives and the three strategic objectives. When it comes to business planning. The business planning only aligns to core objectives, because strategic objectives, three as they are meant to effect change and to improve the way Parliament do things. It's a very long-term process. I know once the strategic plan has been finalized, committees will also revise their plans on that basis. So when it comes to the core objective of Parliament within the committee activity, if you look at the next page. The first one is passing legislation. What committee needs to do, needs to align its plan across that particular core objective of passing legislation, because the role and the main task of a committee under its mandate or in terms of the rule is basically to process legislation. That aligns well with the first core objective of passing legislation. So the activities of a committee, we aligning to that particular core objective number one, will be things like briefing by departments, conduct public hearings, research conducted, committee deliberations, and formal consideration in terms of the vote. That's the first one. The second one, in terms of overseeing and scrutinized executive action, is basically about conducting oversight, which is their main activity. The core objective is slightly or slightly expressed, but now the main task basically says the committee must conduct oversight. No, what does it mean? What does it mean to conduct oversight? On your extreme right, in the third column, it talks about scrutinizing strategic plan for the department that the committee oversees, the speeches, the government fiscal review, or a department, because if you're looking at a committee, it focuses on specific department and institutions that it oversees, policy documents, and the budget allocation, the briefings and the reports. Obviously, the departments are called into report and the committee scrutinizes and it conducts oversight. That is in terms of it conducts site visits, oversight visits. So that's the second one. The third one, under public participation, it's really about committee making sure that calling in for public participation in the legislation process, basically. And the fourth one, with regard to corporate government, is about the extent to which the committee perform statutory functions with regard to oversight and legislation. The last one is really about tracking issues that relate to international relations, international agreements, for example, or undertaking visits in terms of understanding what are the international relations that affect the work that Parliament do. Now, with regard to the social, the main task for the committee is now broken further in terms of specifically what are the activities associated and what is expected output, and then what are the KPIs with regard to that particular component. And obviously the responsibility here is a committee with the chairperson as the leader in terms of the process and making sure that the work that the committee has planned in terms of their business plan indeed take place as planned. And I know it requires that time frames be included in the planning. So time frames are, as I discussed with Adams yesterday, it's something that you actually set under a KPI when you say public hearing will be conducted for this specific component will be conducted by the end of the third quarter, and then that's how you map it out across the five year period or anyhow that the way that it fits it didn't fit in the context that will be operating. So basically,
one point, just for clarity, in case they don't know, the KPI is a key performance indicator.
Thank you for that. So basically, the template provides it's actually a template that really seeks to put together everything that the committee has to do in terms of the core objectives as well as its mandate. So whatever you see there is actually generic in every committee, but in line with what that committee has to do in terms of oversight over a particular department, you need to really amend it accordingly. And also in line with the recent environment in terms of what you need to do as part of conducting our work in line with the plan that the government has already put in place, this understand what are the 9 priorities that were announced at the State of the Nation address. That basically, in a nutshell, how a plan will look and how it is to be developed in terms of making sure that it aligns with the core the core plan of the of Parliament. And if you look at the template as it is at the moment, it gives you everything that we need to do. All what needs to happen is for the committee collectively to really agree on time frames that are realistic, and also to look at what is ahead of us as a committee, what needs to happen now in the next 2 quarters, what are the legacy activities that the previous committee has especially passed on to this particular committee, because the legacy work needs to be carried out first as a priority. But now, how do you map out that over a period of time, given the fact that certain legislative pieces of legislation need to be completed, for example, by the end of this year, you know, so that they can be adopted in Parliament. And that's how, in a nutshell, how it works. From developing a new strategic plan for both Parliament and how it happened in the third Parliament, and the fact that the committee must be aware that the work that we do now is based on the third Parliament strategic plan, based on those 5 core objectives and the 3 strategic objectives. If it happens that the new vision of Parliament changes in this process leading to the 20th of October to table the third plan, the committee will have to come back and revise their plan, you know. But what I like about this process, it's not really a time-wasting process. But by the time we hit that moment, we would have done a lot of work. It's really about amending and revising and aligning it with the new plan. The core objective, the mission, is unlikely to change because the mission remains the same. The mission is constitutionally driven. It is unlikely to change. For you to change the mission of Parliament, you have to go and amend the constitution, which is something that I don't see happening now. At the moment, the mission remains intact. You've got those 5 core objectives, so the business plan is based on that. It's only when the committee will be required to participate in advancing the vision of Parliament. For example, at the moment, the leadership is talking about proactive oversight instead of reactive oversight. For example, if you plan with the department, you monitor the department on and on. In other words, you don't plan with the department and wait for the department to implement and go after 6 months and say that you've done this. Instead, you plan with it, you are part of the planning and you understand what they have planned, and then on a regular basis, on a weekly basis, you monitor that work based on the plan that they put here. That's why this time around, I think it's a very, very proactive process. So you see, it is actually going to change the face of oversight as it used to be. In the past, as part of the strategic process, the objective was to build quality process of oversight. Like build, for example, there was a project that produced oversight and accountability model. That was one of the process to really build the process and mechanism and system in place to be able to enable committees to occur to conduct their oversight activities quite as seamlessly and easily. And that is now in place. Now, how do we translate that model into action? And that is really what is going to inform the way the committee conducts its oversight. So what I was emphasizing is that we might have to come back and review what we have planned, what we're going to submit by Friday to the chairperson, to the House chairperson of committee. But then it won't really require much work. It will be just minor adjustments here and there. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Someone has gone to make a copy of the presentation or the pages that have been cited.
As I indicated, for future reference, there's a summary of that document that he just presented on in the volume 2 of the members' documentation.
I was just saying that as soon as they come back with a copy, it is for ease of exposition for members, it would be better able to interact with your overview that you've given. We have tried to follow as much as we can, but it's always better to have a hard copy to reference. And then, Eddie, another thing that I've just remembered for future, if we can structure our meetings to at least start at 9:30. The reason for saying this, I know that quite a number of pastors from the villages arrive at Parliament at night. So for those who don't have transport, it would not be fair for them to be hurrying on the bus drivers. So let's seek to start around 9:30, and then we know that people have been able to get to Parliament, then they can come to the meeting. Members, once we wait for the printed copy, are there any comments or remarks that you'd like to make at this meeting?
Well, I was listening with passion to the presentation, but you've made the point which I wanted to share with the presenter. You know that the documentation that we have, which was given to us prior to the meeting, rather prepared us for this meeting. So whatever then that becomes additional to that, especially at the meeting, it somehow disempowers members to engage fully. So I think basically the point you have made, Mr. Chairperson. But I was also interested to hear more about the 7 bills that will be tabled before Parliament in this quarter, in the next, in the last quarter. And our approach, you know, really, in terms of engaging on every single one of those, just having a synopsis of the actual intentions of such amendments, so that we don't go in a process where, you know, political parties have different policies. But it is rather better when the portfolio committee is aware, and in that process would become the champions of the particular bill. Then it would be up to members themselves to do that. But the role of the committee and the support staff would be then to ensure that there is capacity among members themselves, so that we don't really jump up and down, some in support and some condemning the bill and without having enough information. That is what at times I found, even though I'm serving here for the first time. But I mean, there was a controversial bill, for instance, in 2003 on the termination of pregnancy, which was something very interesting for Department of Health. But you will find the response for many political parties. Some would have said yes, but they said no because they weren't quite familiar with the intention. And I wouldn't like to fall as a victim in that process. Also, Chairperson, I had a particular interest on the role of this Parliament in actually looking far back on some of the commitments which this country has made under the apartheid regime, both in terms of the treaties and, of course, some of the conventions which have been signed. And I'm saying this because I had a particular interest in the 1951 Convention on Refugees. And if you look at some of the sections, for instance, one of the very much contentious segments of that would be Section 26 of that, which affects Section 18 and 20 and a number of other areas that need to be covered. Unfortunately, I don't have a copy, and it won't be fair to begin to go to the details of that. But one of the challenges why we have so much of a challenge around the migration, and the fact that we complain every day about so many of our centers. And looking at the budget itself here on the budget vote, where really not much could be achieved if we want to start a new center, for instance.
or if we want to employ more staff, and I think that was one of the challenges that I've looked at. So there's a lot of work that we are entrusted with, and I hope that the officials will be quite frank with us and give us as much as possible information that is really relevant to us. Hence, I'm seeking this assistance in terms of these deals, that they are made available and that we are briefed on the intents and just the synopsis of those, so that we don't make the wrong decisions here. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks. Wait, Adam, let me first take questions, and then some might be related or comments from members. Then I'll give you a chance to respond. Any other contribution from members, comments, questions? None at this stage. Adam.
Yeah, just related to the question on the bills and what the
A question on the bills. I've started the process of outlining some of the bills. As far as the department's concerned, they themselves are not 100% certain what all the issues are. So I've begun an outline of this legislation that's listed in the strategic document I gave you. It should be completed by the end of the week. We'll have an overview of that. And then what I'll do in relation to what you said is also include an overview of the related international agreements, like the 51 Convention, the facilitation of movements of persons, and other related, I'll include that in the document, as you suggest.
Thank you.
If you wish, I can proceed with the actual document. I've given members copy of the strategic document, this six-page outline, which is related to what Mr. Dollar's given us. Basically, the five main parts of key focus areas for Parliament, and I've populated it given the issues raised by members in the last meeting. Given input from the department and the legal section on legislation, and also given input, and as suggested by members, also the State of the Nation address by the President on the key focus areas relevant to the Department of Home Affairs. So what we'll do is we'll move on to page 2, which is the first tabled graph of that document that we've given you.
I want to make sure that members know you are referring to the document titled the first page, bills to be submitted to Cabinet and Parliament in 2009. So you are saying
no, it's the one
second
I gave,
page.
The one I gave you is called an example of 2009 to 2011 strategic plan of Parliament. Which is based, again, as I said, if you can just give.
I've got this, the one that starts with example,
yes.
2009-2011,
yeah.
Strategic plan, okay?
Okay, so the dates have to be amended here. We're going to make it for the next 5 years. But again, as I said, this is an example based on the template that Mr. Dola has overviewed. So we'll go on to page 2, which is the first table that you can see. So the first column and the key performance areas are the ones where we've made input. The rest of the outline is generic. It relates to all committees. So the main task as far as processing of legislation, there were two major issues mentioned, as you'll see here in the briefings by the department, were investigations into the Electoral Commission Act, specifically relating to persons voting out of their province. Then there were amendments to the Film and Publications Act, which are taking very long to finalise, and which the committee has taken upon to look into completing as soon as possible. And then the rest from B onwards relates to all the legislation that the department says it's likely to be processing in the next couple of months. It's also within the members' entitlements to suggest amendments to any other legislation. So perhaps given the fact that the deadline for this is Friday, what I'll do is I'll get the outline of all the current legislation out to members, and if they want to specifically raise issues on amendments they'd like to raise on those before Friday, I can get that to them. And then, so if there's anything more other than these legislations that are listed here that members feel they'd like to amend or look into, then they can tell me, and we'll include it in the strategic plan for the next 5 years. But basically, what we've got so far is recognition of Customary Marriages Act, Immigration Amendment Bill, Birth and Death Registration, South African Citizenship Refugee Amendment Bill, Advanced Passenger Processing Bill, and the Marriage Amendment Bill. And if you look at the key performance indicators in the fourth column, this is when they're likely to be put out by Parliament. They're given about 6 months before this to Parliament, and then Parliament, given that they have to go through all the activities in column two, usually takes them between 3 and 6 months to complete the process before we pass it on to either the NCOP or to the presidency for completion. Now, I've given an explanation here of the different kinds of bills, because the members also asked me to do that in the last meeting. There's basically four different types of bills. Members may be aware, but for update. The Section 74 bills are amendments to the Constitution. Section 75 bills, you'll see this in the second column here, are ordinary bills not affecting the provinces. Those are ones that we can send directly from the committee to the presidency. And then Section 76 bills are the ones affecting provinces, which have to then go via the NCOP before they go to the presidency. And then Section 77 bills, which don't really affect us because they relate to mandatory issues. So there's a delta delta there. And so, yeah, that basically covers the legislative aspect. Should I outline the whole process, or would you want to add questions here at this point?
Any questions at this point? Comment on
thank you for the opportunity. In terms of the page, the first page, you know, on the proposal, question A1, because I mean the Electoral Commission Act. This was a question by a member who chose this, Matthew, that on the Section 24A, which relates to people voting outside their voting districts, not necessarily provinces. So that Section 24A, it was an intention that we probably look at the Act as it stands, whether we deal with that if we do have some powers, and then when we don't have, then we engage the Electoral Commission, then they can deal with that when they do their electoral reform or the regulation of that process. I just wanted to amend that one.
Yeah, this is what we covered. It also emanated from the presentation by the Electoral Commission, where they pointed out that the publicity that was generated around the so-called shortage of ballot papers was as a result of this, where people could vote in any province that they were. So they also sought our assistance to help clarify that process. So we'll take on board their views. We'll also take on board the experience and input of members. Thank you.
Okay, so then we'll
Mamma, do you want to, just before you come in, Adam, welcome.
Thank you. Okay, my apology for coming late is due to transport. Whilst we're still on the immigration Electoral Act. I was wondering as to did we cover the people who were, I mean, our overseas voters, whether did we take them on board also that we need to amend the act regarding the OT? Was it done last time? I don't remember.
I think that was taken into consideration in regard to that, the fact that South Africans abroad were able to vote was the outcome of a court decision. So that precedent would be incorporated into the law. And then in regard to, we made mention earlier on that our meeting for today was scheduled for 9 o'clock. But in future, we should try and make it 9:30 to assist members who come in by bus. I did say the buses arrive here by 9 o'clock and it creates problems for other members. So we have taken that into consideration. Adam?
This is a very strategic, so it's a very high-level document. So we're not going into the specific details, but the fact that we've mentioned the Electoral Act, members are still are free to engage in the particularities of that. So if they want to raise issues other than what I've mentioned here in brackets, they're more than welcome to do that when we go in that process. So this is just like a broad overview, but we've taken note of that. Okay, so if there's no further questions about legislation, we'll move on to the next section, which is the conducting of oversight. What I've done here in the first column is outline the first four bullets are what emanated from the State of the Nation address by the President, issues relating out of that address to Department of Home Affairs, and I've adjusted it so that it relates to our role in oversight, the committee's role in oversight, and then the other issues are just general issues that were raised by members. Now, all these issues actually relate to the Department of Home Affairs as well as all the entities, DPW, the Electoral Commission, and the Informal Publications Board. So each of these areas here are things that we can assess all those entities and the department on. Some of them are more specifically about the department, but they're generally they're general issues that need to be looked at. The first of them was assessing the level of public service, especially when applying for identity documents. So this is something that that needs to be done in all these processes in the second thing here. So whether we are looking at policy documents, speeches by the ministry, budget allocations, reports, annual reports, strategic plans, all of those things, we need to bear in mind that we are looking at public service. How is public service improved? How is identity provision being improved? And also when we conduct our oversight, that's one of the key issues that the President recommended being considered for the department. Okay. The same is true of the second one, assessing efforts against identity theft and corruption. Again, we look at, when we scrutinize any of the presentations or documents by the department outlined here in the second column, and also when we conduct oversight, we need to investigate what efforts have been initiated in terms of identity theft and corruption. Not everybody settled. Just to brief the members who've just joined us, we're dealing with a strategic document which the Secretary will give us. And we're dealing with a second strategic objective, which is the conducting of oversight. Members were given a previous version of this. I'll give the new version will be given to members now. Okay, shall I continue?
you may. Members have been given the documents. For those who have just arrived, I might just repeat again and say the meeting was scheduled for 9. But I'm also aware of the fact that a number of buses only arrive at Parliament at 9. So in future, we'll seek to schedule our meetings for 9:30 to ensure that members who are dependent on buses are able to attend the meeting. So that's fine. Adam?
Yes.
Again, to bring all the honourable members onto the same page, we're dealing with page 3 of the document that's been handed out. We just outlined the legislation that needs to be dealt, that's likely to be dealt with by the committee on the first page of the table. The second page of the table is now dealing with the conducting of oversight. The first column outlines some of the key strategic issues that are dealt with in the State of the Nation address. Relating to the Department of Home Affairs, and then the last three bullets are general issues that are of concern to the DHA and all the entities, the Government Printed Works, the Electoral Commission, and the Film and Publications Board. So we are already on the third bullet here, which is a review of systems in place before the 2010 FIFA World Cup. Again, as was mentioned by Mr. Dollar, there's a key role here in members taking a proactive oversight role, because we don't want to have to assess after the fact that where things have gone wrong. So it's critical for honourable members and the committee to engage with the department and the various implementation partners to make sure that systems and strategies are in place before the World Cup actually happens. So that's just relating to what Mr. Dollar said. And then again, something that we need to do in all conducting all our oversight, whether it's scrutinizing the strategic plan here in third column or the budget allocation or any of the briefings by the department, its annual report, which is due sometime in September, we need to assess also in the site visits conducted how much is actually being done with this particular program. It's obviously a really critical issue, given that it's happening next year. The fourthly, as raised by the State of the Nation address, was a review of human resource constraints. And this is specifically relating to both vacancies and also service performance by those already employed by the department. So those are general issues, again, that we need to consider in all the various activities of oversight. Then, lastly, and then the next point, the fifth point, is overview of quality assurance. This is a general issue that's been plaguing the department for a number of years, just in terms of the quality of the documents that they've been putting out, the degree of corruption in terms of provision of both identity theft and false documents being printed. So there's a general need to consider security and the accuracy of both data and the documents that are printed. Again, these are just issues that I picked up from our engagements with the honourable members before, and also from the briefings of the departments and the entities. So members are more than welcome to include additional issues that they feel are important at the strategic high level. Next, we have the monitoring of information and communications technology and constraints, particularly infrastructural constraints, which have been obstacles both with the interaction between the department and the State Information Technology Agency, in terms of provision, for instance, of the smart identity cards and the population register and all these technological projects of the department. Very critical, and one of the key strategic responsibilities of the department, also something that needs to be engaged with in terms of oversight. And then lastly, the scrutinization of both legal migration and refugee document delivery times. Legal migration here will include economic migrants, anybody who's getting a business document, anybody who's getting a study document, all these processes have often taken very long and have inhibited our international relations and inhibited economic interaction with neighboring countries and international countries. So the provision of visas and business permits and all those kinds of things, the department has given specific timelines in its strategic plan that need to be kept and need to be improved over the next 5 years. So it's something that the committee could monitor if it chooses to do so. And then also refugee documents, again, there's been continual delays in the provision of asylum and refugee documents to those seeking protection in South Africa, and also abuse of the system by people who aren't entitled to these kinds of protection documents. So the monitoring of both the provision of legal documents to refugees and the deportation of those who aren't entitled to these documents needs to be monitored, the time frames. So then if we go to the fourth column here, basically the key performance indicators indicate what will have been achieved if we do this properly. So the first would be, for instance, with all these issues raised, is that the issues have been identified. Questioned, the department or entity has been questioned, and the issue has either been resolved or is in the process of being resolved. And then if we go further down in the column relating to specifically to oversight, if we go into the fourth column here, oversight trips, according to the chairperson of committee, Mr. Bopela, there are certain constraints or certain requirements for the department. That we need to achieve. Firstly, it's recommended within the budget constraints of the committee that at least two oversight trips be conducted per annum. These are local oversight trips. But the suggestion of the members, and which is actually perfectly possible within the rules of Parliament, is that we split those oversights into two or three groups of members so that we can cover more areas in those oversights. So it might be at one time, but we'll divide it up, the committee, into either three groups or two groups as the members decide. And this is just a suggestion here, for instance, that the splitting of the committee members over two oversight trips into two. The first oversight trip could cover three problematic service communities. So, for instance, the Pretoria Refugee Reception Office has had problems in terms of providing refugee documents. So one group of members could visit that, and another one could visit people like the border posts and whichever area is of critical interest at that stage. And then, secondly, the second oversight trip could again divide into three and conduct service delivery bottlenecks, for instance, actually visiting Department of Home Affairs headquarters or the Government Printing Works new passport facility, places where there have traditionally or historically been problems in terms of providing services. So that, again, is just a suggestion in terms of how we could divide up those oversight trips. And then also over the next 5 years, the committees can conduct two international trips. And what was raised by the members as well was the possibility of conducting trips to SADC member states in terms of overseeing the facilitation of movements of persons protocol, which has been again in process for a number of years and is quite critical to other strategic objectives of government in terms of economic cooperation and economic and cultural cooperation. So that's the possibility of conducting visits to these international countries. And again, I'm not sure what the possibilities are here, but perhaps dividing members up and a couple of members visiting one state and another, because there are 14 states in SADC. We can't obviously visit them all, but then it would be a question of narrowing down which ones we think are of importance, or of critical. For instance, like Namibia does a large amount of its migration monitoring and its movement of people control. It's all paperwork. It's all on paper. A lot of their documents are still hard copies. They don't have a sufficient computer system to be able to interact with South Africa on a level that will facilitate a better movement of people between those two countries. So that's a suggestion there. And again, like I said, open to members now for the second section on oversight. If there's any other issues they'd like to add or questions.
Members, comments, questions?
Well, I think the seven areas that we currently have on the paper in terms of the intentions are not really a bad idea. But I would like to rather be an early bird in saying that even though we have good intentions to visit all areas, possible areas that are problematic areas, it would be wiser not to forget the most problematic areas, for instance, the Nyanga Refugee Center, which we all know, and the fact that we have a responsibility on the issue of the influx of people coming from Zimbabwe to South Africa. And I do not know. I mean, when I read the newspaper, we seem to have half of Zimbabwe, possibly by next year, if we don't really take this matter seriously. Even though the negotiations and the current unity government is going quite well, but things might not be as gloomy, as beautiful as they seem to appear. Maybe I'm exaggerating the case, but the seriousness of this and some of the groups that work in Zimbabwe reveal that there's a serious problem that may affect this country if we do not look into that very important issue. Maybe our way of operation should not be far away from the International Cooperation Unit, seeing that maybe their role will also interlink with our mandate in that regard. So I'm not sure how we can take that one. It's just that it remains an interest. For instance, when we went to an oversight visit to the Nyanga Refugee Center, we discovered there that most people were from Zimbabwe, despite the fact that there were people from other countries. But when I spoke to every single person there, the nationality was very simple, Zimbabwe. The next person is Zimbabwe. So it shows, I mean, even in Gauteng, in the refugee center that the gentleman was referring to, most people are, you know, were said to have come from Gauteng because of the delays in the center there. But I think generally we have a challenge in terms of how we mold those. I think the sooner we split and check how soon can we go on this visit, maybe the better for us to hold the executive to account as a portfolio committee.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would just like to ask if we can include with the 2010 World Cup the monitoring of that. At our last Film and Publications Board meeting, we've discussed the issue of child trafficking and child pornography. If we can just include an oversight, and also I see it's under four child protection advocacy, but just a program to address that. We discussed that we will maybe consider having a meeting with the Sports Portfolio Committee and the Safety and Security one. And also there was, social development. Maybe that's something that can be brought forward, because I think that's an urgent issue that we need to look at.
Thanks for reminding us what area we had covered, Joe? Or should I say the Honorable Joe Nagluwa?
There we go.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I just want to say concerning the oversight and also the decision to split the committee members. I just want some clarity as far as how we're going to cluster these two groupings. I'm not sure whether that will be of a big issue to me to see who's going where. And the second thing is very important. I think the department must indicate to us, as indicated here, the problematic areas. And I'm of the opinion that this committee must have actually the final say. It will be our prerogative to indicate which areas we would like to visit. I think that is important for us.
Just to give you clarity in regard to the intention to subdivide our committee, the underlying reason for this is budgetary constraint. The number one option, obviously, would have been if we were in a position, we sit down as a portfolio committee and, for example, we know what's happening at Nyanga, somebody else knows what's happening in Johannesburg, somebody else might be knowing what's happening in Port Elizabeth, a fourth person might know what's happening in Mpumalanga. But the reality of the situation would be that our budget for outreach at the national level, the one leg of the allocation that we have, besides the one for visiting a neighboring state or going overseas, that would determine exactly if we were to send all members to one province, what are the implications? If we could utilize the same budget and subdivide our committee into two to enable them to go to two provinces instead of one. So the rationale, that's the main rationale. So obviously we say to the committee, give an indication, your first option where you'd like to go. Unfortunately, for a smaller party like the Independent Democrats, Joe would not be able to go to both provinces unless I have to use the wisdom of Solomon and cut him in half. But other parties, DA, would be able to send one person to province A and the other to province X. That's basically the intention that divides that. Nobody will say, Joe, you must go to Nyanga when you don't want to go to Nyanga. The other issue that I wanted to table, in your contribution, you made mention that recently, I think that's when we met at the Water Club, part of your outreach visit as the DA, I think, from what you said, I've not had a formal report, was to go to Nyanga.
Yes.
So what would be good is for you to prepare a report for this committee, to say what you have seen there, what it is. So on the basis of that, it would give us indication as to which areas to identify, then we can reach out. Are you still with me? I'm not expecting an answer now, so I'm not pressurizing, but I'm just saying that, I've noted you. I'm just saying that that would be good to enrich the portfolio committee. We went there, this is what we found, this is what we think we should do. We are bringing this to the committee. Then we look at that and take the matter forward. So at an ideal opportunity, prepare us a one page or two pages, but I'm sure there will be time if you are in the position to share something later on in the meeting, I'll give you the occasion, opportunity to do so.
For clarity purposes, to ask, in future, if we do conduct oversight visits in our own time, say in constituency period or in other times, at other times, what is the method that we should use if we want to share the information firstly with the rest of the committee? Should we contact yourself and the committee secretary to arrange a time and a date? And then secondly, certain problems will need to be addressed by the department. For instance, some of the things that we witnessed at Nyanga is some parliamentary questions flowed from there, but some issues really need the intervention of the minister and of the director general, for instance. How should we as a committee then handle that? And what is the correct method, according to you, to deal with it?
My guidance in regard to that is that members in the constituency period, that's when we reach out to our constituents, all the citizens of South Africa. So you are obviously conducting work that relates to this particular portfolio committee and other portfolio committees that you are part of. So the experience or the issues that emanate from that, that you'd like to share with the portfolio committee, that intention has to be communicated to the chair. And then the chair, in conjunction, will arrange or facilitate that with the committee clerk. But obviously, in that engagement, you have been busy with your constituency work. We have the program of our meetings that are going to take place. Our program will continue, but it might happen that there's a major issue, like to use the period example rather of last year, where there were outbreaks of xenophobic attacks, there were outbreaks of conflicts in communities. So even when the portfolio committee had its planned program, but because of the nature of that particular occurrence, we'd have to foreground giving attention to that particular issue because of its emergency or urgency. So that should also be taken into consideration. And then if there are issues that during one's constituency work one would like to share with the portfolio committee, but there are also issues that one immediately has to address and communicate with the department, then it's not a question of first waiting to come and share with the portfolio committee. One would be able to do those at both levels, engage the department, but also engage the portfolio committee.
With specific reference to Nyanga, may I then request that that at the earliest time that we can have request the director of the centre as well as other senior officials, maybe of the department, to come and have a meeting with us, because I will report back if you would give me an opportunity on some of the issues that we see, but on these specific issues regarding the security and the security personnel. But also another pressing issue is the fact that the High Court of Cape Town gave them until the 30th of September to move out of that premises. And at our last visit, I was there twice now in the past 2 or 3 months. At our last visit, it was clear that they haven't found a new space yet. And there's no interim temporary arrangement. It's going to create utter chaos.
Let's do this in regards to that area. We had a report from the department. The department did report that they have to move out of that facility and obtain alternate accommodation. We have not had a status report from the department. You, in the interim, have gone to the area. There are observations that you have made, and there are conclusions that you think should emanate from this. But we can't assist with the conclusions before we've had the benefit of the report. So we first have to hear what you're saying And then on the basis of that charter, way forward. So what I'll do is with the committee clerk and then see how soon we can give you the opportunity to share your experience with the committee and then also provide us with a one page in regards to that particular issue. Shall we leave it there, members? Okay, let me give you and then we come back to the presentation.
Chairperson, this report that we're talking to is readily available. So I think from the committee secretary's point of view, he must not be wary to convene an urgent meeting when where the need arises. You know, because we're ready from our side. So at any given time, given the notice, then we'll be able to present that case.
I must just remind you, the committee clerk can't convene any meeting. He can't. No, that's in a very light note. But the issue is taken on board that actually the report is available. So we'll just check when we can integrate it with our meetings and then get the report from you, sharing of information. Can we go back to the report?
If I could just address the issues raised by some of the issues raised by the honourable members. As I mentioned before, this is a very strategic document, and in that sense, it's quite abstract. So you're not as specific about particular places and particular functions that you're going to be conducting, both in the sense that it's strategic, but also you, in terms of oversight, you don't want to give away too much what you're planning on doing, because you have to have the advantage of surprise and those kinds of things. So, as mentioned, we have mentioned very generally that we're going to conduct two oversight trips, but it doesn't say to this office or that office. So that's the members' prerogative. And as to whether it's going to be two or three groups that we can decide, I'll interact with Eddie and we'll decide, given the budgets and the program of the committee, what's going to be more viable in terms of dividing into two or three groups, and then we can give feedback on that too.
Just a second, Adam. Mr. Dollar has indicated that whilst you'd like to stay with us for the rest of the day, he has another prior meeting scheduled for 10:30. But we do have his commitment that he'll stay in touch with us. And when we need to call on his assistance and expertise, he says he's open to further engagement. I hope I'm quoting you correctly. Fine. You are at liberty to go and thank you very much for your contribution. Adam, back to you.
Continuing with that, so we can make a plan either sooner or later, depending on which areas, problem areas we need to visit, and it's really just a question of members' prerogative. In terms of the child trafficking issue, as was indicated, I've mentioned that in the cooperative government section, just because it's got more entails more issues of, I mean, where you put them, it's really open to suggestion where we put these things. And there is a lot of overlap between the different prerogatives. So because there's less things in the third section, I put it there. And also because it's related more to cooperation between the different government departments. But I'll mention, as suggested, the cooperation with specific other departments. In terms of members also visiting on their own, in their own constituency period, and conducting oversight on their own time, that would also fall into the third strategic area in terms of cooperative governance. One of the things that can be done there is the presentation of reports from individual oversight will all contribute in terms of our. The third one, facilitating public participation and involvement. So the fact that they're interacting directly with their respective communities is in any way part of the members' responsibilities. And in terms of being able to prove that, in terms of the fourth column here with key performance indicators, the reports that were made available, for instance, in terms of Nyanga, for instance, could be contributed as part of your performance indicators. And so that would be useful. So whatever oversight you conduct, the reports that come out of that will fall then into the public participation, because those documents are made available to the broader audience through the parliamentary monitoring group and other media. As the Honourable Chairperson said, engaging with the executive and cabinet, that actually falls. As we outline the various issues likely to be of importance as far as the State and Nation address, one of the activities here in the second column is addressing questions to the executive and to cabinet in the assembly or directly in terms of parliamentary questions. So we can raise any of these key issues and additional issues as we choose, and then we can also record them as we update this document. Because as I said, it's an ongoing process, a strategic document, and it will include any additional activities in our records at a later stage. Coming to the clustering of members, that's really just which members go to which areas is really a choice of the members and their respective expertise, but we can't, as I said before, we can't state exactly which areas we're going to go to, because we don't want to give ourselves away, first of all, and also because this is a very broad document. So Mr. Bapela will want to know the overarching issues. He won't necessarily want the specific details, but we can give those if requested. Also the amount of areas. Okay, I've already said it depends on the budget constraints and the general program of the committee. I've asked Eddie yesterday, he'll give it a brief idea. I think the members already have an idea of what the general program for the committee includes, but Eddie will give some of the other deadlines, for instance, like when is the annual report likely to come, more or less when is various other issues likely to come. So, for instance, here in the second column, we've got the annual reports, which you'll also give an idea of maybe which are good times to conduct oversight trips when the members are not too busy and those kinds of things. I think I've addressed all the issues, yeah. And so, with your permission, and if there's any further questions, I'll move on to the next strategic issue.
Thank you, Adam. Any comments, questions on the portion you have just answered? If there are none, let's move to the next session.
Okay, so the facilitation of public participation and involvement, that's just it's a general issue. Again, if I can just remind the members that just joined us, there's this set of documents that was given to all the members, and documentation part 2 on facilities and governance, and there's a section 8 here which summarizes the whole strategic planning imperatives and strategic method or strategic protocol that the members follow in terms of strategic planning and business planning. So if you want to, they can touch up on that. It's quite a brief document. So, in terms of public hearings, which is the key method of engagement here, there's a number of different ways that this can be done. As I said before, there's an overlap between the oversight function in the second strategic objective and the third one of public participation, in the sense that when these trouble spots are visited in oversight, there's also reports that are presented from that, and there's an interaction directly with persons in those communities on their satisfaction. So that particular engagement will fall under both these areas. what has been done in the past, and another good way of interacting with the public is conducting workshops where Parliament can invite other members of the public to come to Parliament, or we can have an external venue where we could deal with a broad-scale strategic issue. So whether it's child protection or the 2010 World Cup preparations or provision of electronic documents, this still needs to be decided by members. I don't know if we need to specify it now, but we could say which issue is really burning and which is really important that needs to be dealt with, and we can have a workshop where we invite stakeholders from NGOs and from communities and from government departments, and all of them come together and engage around the issue. So as to what kind of issue needs to be dealt with, that's the members' prerogative, the honourable members' prerogative. And that doesn't need to be done now, but it's something that needs to be done at least on an annual, if not biannual basis. There's also, in terms of general interaction in the constituency work, and also the general interaction with the honourable chairperson, with the public in terms of radio programs and broadcasts, television broadcasts, publications by the committee or by the research unit, newsletters, the website. Members can also make contributions to the website if they so wish. And there's also joint parliamentary projects like the People's Assembly and Taking Parliament to the People, which all fall under this kind of area of public participation and involvement. So there's a number of issues which we could engage in, and so I've just mentioned them generally here in the Key Performance Indicator column in number 4 column here, and then the specifics of which the members can then decide. So I wouldn't say we necessarily have to include which particular issue we want to deal with, but the fact that we do intend to conduct at least one workshop on a strategic issue, I think we can suggest that. So that's pretty much, and then I mean what we have here in the second column is just the administrative stuff that the procedures we need to follow. So for instance, that there's an advertisement, there's an accommodation organized, all those things. That's mostly like administrative stuff that the committee secretary and myself would be sorting out. So members' real engagement is in terms of the first and the fourth column. So that's the next strategic issue. If there's anything additional?
Joe?
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. I just want to make a general comment. Also, as far as my experience is concerned to the other various portfolio committees that I'm serving on, when it comes to public participation, when we conduct public hearings, there's this culture in some of the portfolio committees that they are sending you the stuff or giving you the stuff the day of the meeting. When you come to a meeting, people do their presentations, and you know, as a member, you don't have properly time to respond or to also deliver an input. But I must say, with us, the experience is the contrary, and I must also congratulate Eddie and Adam themselves for standing staff a day or two. So when you come to a meeting, you can participate fully. But I just want to give out a warning signal when we have other people coming from various committees to come and make public hearings and stuff, so that we can have the stuff for us beforehand. Thank you.
Thank you. The issue that I would like to emphasize under this facilitating public participation and involvement, our main focus should be to be proactive. That's where all the advocacy that you do, improving, enhancing public knowledge in regard to home affairs, enhancing the same knowledge in regard to economic migrants, refugees, people who find themselves in the country. That's an ongoing outreach program that we have to engage in, so that the issue of so-called hotspots, when that arises, it does not come as a surprise. We have been engaging with the various committees and doing what we ought to do. So when such problems arise, challenges, then you are better able to engage them. So at the back of our minds, this just needs to be borne in mind. The thrust there is to be more proactive than reactive. I don't know if there are any further comments from members.
Chairperson, I would just like to ask, at what stage can we make suggestions for, like you said, proactive public meetings to be held, or issues that we think maybe we should investigate, whether we shouldn't have public workshops or get more information on it?
I would say that the issues that we'd like to engage, we share them
when we have our meetings. If there isn't a formal meeting and something has arisen, you write a letter or send a note to the office. I'll have it distributed to the rest of the portfolio committee meeting through the office of Eddie, because we won't always be able to wait until we have a portfolio committee. There are things that will happen in between. So whatever happens in between, the responsibility of the chairperson is that. Carry the work of the portfolio committee, even in between those meetings. So any issue that we have, suggestions that we need to make, let's stay in vibrant contact, and we'll distribute the information to the various political parties. If there are no further comments on this particular section, can we move on, Adam?
In response to the proactive nature of the kind of work that needs to be done by the committee, we made a suggestion in the last meeting that we could keep members better informed through the provision of the daily newspapers. It's one thing we need to find out, and I think Eddie will assist in this, is which members would like hard copies of those and which would like them by email, because we don't want to fill up email boxes, because they come pretty much daily. And then as to whether they'd like them on a daily or weekly basis. So we just need to know that. But then we'll make sure that all the English Afrikaans, whatever newspapers, all either get sent electronically or physically to the members' cubicles on a regular basis, so that they know which areas are coming up in the news. So Eddie will arrange that. Because we were going to send them out, but we just didn't know. There's some new members and old members, so we weren't so certain about that. But we'll make sure that gets the members in the format that they choose.
So, good folks, you just indicate to Eddie as to the format that you'd like to receive the information in. It's not something that we'll do right now, but after the meeting, you can communicate with him.
Okay, so moving on to the fourth strategic objective here. The facilitation of cooperative governance. The issues that I've put here, again, subject to the members' input, is the committee will plan, direct, and review its processes in line with government imperatives. So there's a number of fora in which the various government departments and members of cabinet and members of the National Assembly interact. So this process of planning for the committee is a continual process where honourable members will interact on various fora, whether it's the forum of South African DGs or through the government intergovernmental clusters or in study groups or any issues that emerge. in those fora can again be continually contributed to the strategic planning process, which is an ongoing process. Although we have particular deadlines in terms of submitting this document, it continues to be a fluid document that we can continue to contribute to. So just bearing in mind all those various interactions that the members might have, they can contribute into the process. So it will fall under this strategic objective. One of the suggestions that came from the project management office was that there's a benchmarking of human resource constraints and progress by the department, and comparing the different provinces and comparing the department with other departments at a national level. So this is something, making sure that the department has sufficient standards to be an employee of choice. So that, are there any obstacles that the department has in comparison to other departments that make people not want to work for Home Affairs, or make them want to leave Home Affairs, and those kinds of things. So the department itself in its strategic plan has a number of steps in place that they plan to implement in terms of improving the employment rates and filling vacancies and retaining knowledgeable staff. And so the facilitation of cooperative government would make sure that happens in a broader context, so that we compare the department's not only looking at its own progress, but looking at its progress in relation to government in general. Again, that's just a suggestion. As was raised earlier, the child protection advocacy is again a multi-departmental issue, which could fall under this cooperative government, both in terms of engagement with other departments and also with other portfolio committees that might take an interest in that issue. Then the approving of international agreements. I had here the monitoring of progress on the facilitation of movement of persons protocol in both internally in government departments and internationally with neighboring countries. And then I added, given the members' input, a review of the 1951 convention signing of and implementation of. And we can add additional international agreements based on the summary that we'll make available to members as soon as possible. Because the document, as I understand, has to be given by Friday. So if we give members an overview of some of the international and local legislation, they can give any contributions. We'll give it to the members tomorrow. And then if they can make any contributions before Friday, if they want additional inputs, that we will make sure that they're included. And the same goes for anything else we've dealt with here today. If you don't raise an issue here and it occurs to you later what is important, we'll consider how to include it. Okay, so then in terms of key performance areas, here we can say what is the, in terms of conducting international oversight, we can say what is the preparedness by neighboring countries in terms of facilitation. So this actually needs to be specific. In terms of the freedom of movement of persons, two committee meetings conducted outside of Parliament. This is again something from Mr. Bopera's office. I'm not sure if we necessarily have to include this here, but given the space constraints and also the broader role of Parliament, two of the meetings per annum need to be, any of the committee meetings need to be conducted outside of Parliament. So we've already done one, so that's been partially achieved. The departmental staffing constraints and progress assessed per province in relation to other departments. Okay, so what you have in the first column is what you'd like to achieve, and then the last column in the fourth column is what will have been achieved if you've done that. So that's the output, the key performance indicator. In terms of the child protection advocacy, cooperation between departments and entities is monitored. And the next one there is bilateral meetings with neighboring countries and portfolio committees held in terms of the facilitation of movements protocol. That could perhaps fit better with on top here. And then lastly, I've got to interact with the International Cooperation Portfolio Committee on Progress on the protocol. So a lot of these relate specifically to the facilitation of movement protocol, but I'll adapt it so that it includes also the 1951 Convention and other international agreements. So this is just based on my initial, again, it's a provisional document. So if members have any other contributions, those will also be useful. Oh, then the last point here, appointment of public office bearers. I'm still investigating this, but there was something mentioned by the Electoral Commission about succession plans for the next commissioners of the Electoral Commission that I think can be included in here, but I'm still getting legal advice on that as to where exactly that would come. So the Portfolio Committee would have some role in approving or suggesting commissioners, but also in helping implement succession plans. And that can be done both in terms of amending the Electoral Commission Act and saying you can actually put in succession plans in the Act, or we could come up with here something in terms of a standard operating procedure for the Electoral Commission that would include succession plans. And the Portfolio Committee could take a role in that as far as appointment of public office bearers. So that's the next section. If there's any contributions, suggestions, questions.
Good morning, Chair. I am very sorry that I'm late. You know, in the Eastern Cape, we have a flight that we are always told that if it's not full, you'll have to wait for another flight. So it's a difference between 7 o'clock and 8 o'clock, and I am really very sorry. I thought I would make this time.
The apology is accepted, ma'am. I left to speak to the chair of public enterprises. In my previous life, I chaired that portfolio committee. But I must confess that I was not aware that they are running our airlines like a taxi service waiting for them. So we'll take up that then. Thank you.
I just wanted to bring another matter which I think could be offered to us. I also belong as an alternate member to the Finance Committee. And in the Finance Committee, we visited the customs unit in Durban. And we found that there is a build-up to an act that is going to help with human trafficking. And there's also another issue that I thought maybe it would also be important for us, the border issues, which was discussed by the customs and the migration process. So in terms of the cooperation with other maybe government departments, maybe we could find out how they are doing it and be part of that at home. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, ma'am. What you have just covered, if it's possible to prepare us a one-pager on the issues that you just mentioned, then we can distribute it also to members for their knowledge, and then we see how it flags other issues that we are also dealing with.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to ask a question concerning the benchmark on HR constraints. Does that include the national office as well? If so, I can just only wish Adam well looking into the red tape, you know, when positions is available, it takes at times 3-6 months up until a year to fill these positions. I'm very much inquisitive to an extent to find out whether the national office is also included in that benchmark.
My view would be that before Adam will obviously answer, give his own opinion, when the department made the presentation to us, they raised the unfilled vacancy profile of the department. And at that particular meeting, members of this committee expressed their displeasure and concern at the state of affairs, because there were quite a number of vacancies in key areas. So if you are to turn around the department, if you are to have better results, then you need the requisite expertise in those positions. So it's an issue that we'll continue tracking at all levels. Adam.
I think I concur with what the chairperson has said. It's a difficult issue. I mean, in government in general, and the vacancy rate in the public service is very high generally. I mean, it's something like a 25-30% vacancy rate. So it's not only the Department of Home Affairs that is struggling with this. So I think the suggestion here coming from the project management office is, again, not only critical of the Department of Home Affairs, but also kind of trying to understand the general issue that government is encountering. So our engagement with the department, especially the members being in a position of authority and oversight, they're aware of the broader issues affecting the public service. So that places the particular problems of the Department of Home Affairs in context. So that this benchmarking of HR constraints is both placing things in context, but then also attempting to address the issue at a higher level. So whether it's interactions with the Department of Public Service Administration or the particular obstacles encountered in the provinces or at the national level, that's up to the members' particular prerogative, where their particular interest lies. They can address it here. Again, this is just the broad issue. As to how members analyze the issue, that's really up to their particular interest and their particular concern. I think that was all that was raised. Yeah. Okay. And then I'll also include the question of migration cooperation between government departments here in the strategic plan as suggested. Can I move on to the next one?
You may do so. I see no end.
Okay. The last section, the facilitation of international participation, it turns out, according to the strategic document, is actually not something that's relevant to this committee. The international participation refers here actually more to particular international fora, like as was outlined before, the Pan-African Parliament, the SADC Parliamentary Forum, and these fora are not ones that members choose to participate in. The highest structure, the presidency or the party leaders, decide who attends these things. So it's not our choice as to who goes. But what we can do is give an outline of the issues that are going to be raised at these fora. So if there's something that relates to us, to the portfolio committee's interests, we can address questions by those who are going to attend, and also we can request reports after we'll make reports available after the fact so that we know what is happening on a broader level. So what I've said here is that issues of relevance can be raised either directly or indirectly depending on where the members are actually chosen to go. Or in paper by those who do go, and then members are informed on the topics that are relevant to their mandate. I mean, that's as far as I can see, that's all that's covered. Any additional issues, I think what we'll do is finalize a later version of the document and make it available to members tomorrow. And then if any additional issues arise, they can kind of raise them. But as to how to gain consensus after this meeting, I'm not sure. Because if one member is interested in it, it mightn't necessarily be the interest of all members. So I'm not sure how we're... Well, I think perhaps we can leave it up to the chairperson to decide.
Any input, send them, and then we'll see how best we integrate them into the document. And then circulate the final document to members. The only way that we can go, there's no other way. Good folks, any other comments, questions on that last portion?
In the absence of that, I'm anticipating that
there might be none, but the... sorry. It's just that the last time we engaged, we were all under the impression that we could. But thanks for this clarity that Adam has brought forward. There's something interesting that comes off the report of the department around the employment of officials. And even though I would like to brought this committee down to that issue as such. But something very interesting that the department is looking at vetting officials when they are employing them, so that they take them through a very comprehensive testing procedure when they employ them. I wonder how much time would that constitute, obviously, in the delay, on top of what we've already encountered in the department. And I'm not sure how much work has been done to that effect and whether that is in place, because it was in 2007 when they pronounced on that very issue. So there's so many questions, I think, for us as the portfolio committee in interacting with the department. I think also it does suggest that we need to do our homework and then begin to engage again once more with the department head, the Director General himself, around the turnaround strategy itself, you know, in terms of the practicality. Because some of the suggestions, you know, date back as far as 2007, May. And it's not really putting us at ease as a portfolio to continue referring to the turnaround strategy without measuring the progress. And obviously some of the challenges that confront the department there too. Thank you, sir.
You are moving slightly ahead, but I won't hold it against you. Suffice to say that I'm sure the department, like any other department, they are very much aware of the burden of their responsibility, that they have to fill the posts. But one of the elements in doing so that they also have to carry on board is to ensure that you are able to conduct basic tests in regard to the people that you employ. We are all concerned about a major problem that the department has had, where corrupt individuals are employed. And that further entrenches this negative image of the department. So even if you have other employees of the department who are doing their work to the best of their ability, but just two reports on corruption, people arrested for corrupt practices, it affects the image of the whole department. So in regard to that, there are areas at the front desk and at the back desk where people deal with sensitive information. So it does become necessary to vet certain individuals. The vetting concern there simply means that in certain instances, like the higher up you go in the department towards your director general level, when you employ some of those individuals, you are at liberty to utilize state resources to do a check. Ben has applied for this job. One, does he have all the requisite qualifications that he claims to have? Somebody has to run a check there. Has this man been in prison for the last period of 5 years? Somebody has to check that. Otherwise, I can come there and I speak very convincingly like a con man, and in the meantime, I'm running records. So in regard to certain positions, it will be necessary to vet the people so that you can diminish that type of problem that you have. But the vetting process cannot and should not be used as an excuse of not employing people and getting ahead. So this is why I think where I started, there's the responsibility to do both aspects in tandem. So we are all concerned that we need to fill positions, but we also need to fill these positions with responsible, credible people. So we'll continue sitting on the department and saying that, how far are you, but are you also getting responsible, good people that are not going to America? Joe, when you are in my meeting, I don't see opposition, and I don't see ruling parties, I don't see your strength. I just see members of this portfolio committee. But I know you are doing it in a light-hearted spirit. Whether we like it or not, when we're here, you come from the various parties. But the word that I want from everyone here, without fear of favor, is what you were sworn in here to do, to act in the best interest of the citizens of this country. So if you make a good contribution or bad one, if I say that I'm not sure of this point that you are making, I'm not looking at you as a member of COPE or as a member of the DA or as a member of the ANC or as a member of the ANC who also has the Communist Party card and Kotatu card. I just look at the veracity and of your contributions here. So that's the best spirit that you try and move. But like any other human being, I've also got my weaknesses. So we'll try our best to move along with that.
There's a good politician there.
Something very interesting. I didn't know that the society and leadership were part of the opposition.
So, I'm not sure if there's anything else we have not covered, but if we have omitted something, as we said, our doors are open. Please contact us. Our responsibility is to enrich our strategic plan, our document. Send us whatever ideas that we might have overlooked or omitted. And this is a working document. As and when there are more crucial issues that arise that we can't plan for, if there is a disaster tomorrow, then obviously we'll have to park our program and look at the most immediate issue and come back to the other issues. So we've got our working documents, we've got the contact of the researcher, we've got Eddie's contact, so let's move forward and do our best in regard to this.
I'll just say it. Salmon like a fish, SALMON. Salmon at... Okay. SALMON, A Salmon, at parliament.gov.za. And my telephone number in office is 403-8304. I'm always at my desk. I'm at my desk all the evening. There was just one issue. If I may, Jefferson, the timelines, did you look into those, Eddie? Do you want to share those here, or should we do those in private?
I think we can do them later, because like I mentioned it to you yesterday, that you know, normally when we do the first plan and budget of the department is after the budget speech by the Minister of Finance. Then depending on whether the department is prepared their strategic plan and table it in Parliament, then we take it from there. And then also with the annual report from September, I put in all the programs that I have here, but we're not 100% sure that no, the department will table the annual report on the time that I've indicated here. So, but I just put it there, which is back from September until the end of the year.
So what we are saying, we'll keep our eye on the ancillary issues, where we need to assist, prod, remind the department, will do so. But our focus is on our particular strategic plan and short-term plan, medium-term, as a portfolio committee. Obviously, we have some direct nexus with the department, so we'll also keep a tab on those issues. On Robben Island, the wardens used to say, enige verdere klagte of versoeke. Any further questions or requests? If there are none, that's it. And when the medical officer came in the morning, you hear him shout and say, the sick, the lame, and the lazy, I have arrived.
What have you forgotten?
The meeting is over. So I'm not going to announce the time that we have returned. You can see what the time is. It's just right there. 11 o'clock. Members, thank you very much. And as I said before, I'm always very happy to see all of you, including Joe. I know he has to balance 25 other meetings, so I'm very privileged when I see those with lesser members. So very welcome and thanks, good luck.
Yes, please.